Accession number 24193, Reel 6.
Mr. Tao, Reel 6. We were talking about some of the officers in the 1st Battalion Royal Norfolk Regiment at the time you were in Germany in 1950. We were talking about Brian Emsden when we broke off. You were saying he was young and bright.
Oh, young, bright, and very helpful to me. He was, by my standards as a second lieutenant, he was a full lieutenant, and therefore it had 2 years more experience than I had about the regiment, and really helped me with one's behavior in the mess, with one's handling of issues with senior officers. We tended all to mess in the, to live in the same officers' block. So you would see these senior officers, i.e. lieutenants, on a very frequent basis. You'd obviously queue up for the bathroom or the shower. And I remembered when we went to the sergeant's mess parties at Christmas time and other event dates, a caution would be whispered that, look, the sergeants love to get an officer plastered. So what you do is you pretend to drink or you sip. You always have another drink, but you get rid of it somehow. And you can do that and drink a lot of water. And, you know, this sort of advice. It didn't stop many of us from getting merry, but it certainly helped.
Can I ask, there's a couple of other majors you may recall. A Major A.C. Gordon, I don't know whether you recall him, and Major Gibbons.
Major Gibbons, I remember.
What was he like?
He was, I think, in command of what's called Headquarter Company, an administrator. They produced the clothing, the ammunition, the weapons, anything that the regiment or battalion required. All these officers were war experienced. All had survived. All had stories to tell. And it was fun to get them to talk.
One well-known NCO who was in D Company, at least for a while, while you were, Company Sergeant Major Winky Fitt was about then.
Yes,
Now, he's a larger-than-life character. What do you remember of Fitt? In Berlin, really. I know you got into trouble a couple of times there, but I don't know whether you were aware of it.
Yes, I was. I was. Winky Fitt was part of the background. A very important person. Of course, we talked about relationships with sergeants and corporals. There was the important relationship with the company sergeant major and the regimental sergeant major. One didn't see much of the regimental sergeant major.
That would be Gillespie. Gilchrist.
That's right, Gilchrist, who went to Australia. One measurably straightened oneself up if you were in the presence, i.e., in the in the barrack square, anywhere near the regimental sergeant major, you straighten yourself up and made sure your uniform was quite tight, and you made sure that you gave a very good return salute, not a casual sort of slouching touching of the cap, but you returned the salute with the efficiency of which it was delivered. The company sergeant major, very important person. He was almost, in business terms, the PA, a personal assistant, to the company commander. So you might talk to him before you spoke to the company commander if you had an issue. You know, the sergeant major, within my section, Private Jones and Smith, had a fight last night. And the fight was broken up. There was no damage, either to themselves, but it was a bit of a mess. And I don't really want to charge them. What do you think? But I thought I might talk to the Major so-and-so about it. And the Sergeant Major would probably say, yes, I know, they do that frequently. Give them a hell of a bollocking, and I think you're right not to charge them. And one was guided in military law by the sergeant major.
Now, do you remember that being Fit? I mean, just because, because this list is not related. The list is from the Empire Orwell, which is much later.
Yes.
Who was your company sergeant major at the time?
I cannot actually remember. I think it was Sergeant Major Bell who should be down there. but I can't remember the, because it was such a short period of time.
He's down as C Company, so it may be that that's from later.
Yes, yes, it
may be.
What
do you remember of Fit? I mean, just as soon as we
Oh, he was a colourful character.
In what way?
He always had stories to tell. He was quite amusing, and he could always solve problems. And I seem to remember going to him if one was short of something, and I can't quite remember. There'd be audits all the time of your company tools, your digging tools and shovels and picks and so on, and wire cutters and torches and very lights, and the army would the regiment battalion would audit them, and invariably there'd be something missing. And rather than they have a court of inquiry about six pickaxes missing or a very pistol, which we lost on one occasion, you'd have a quiet word with Winky Fit, and he would be able to help you by providing, out of some source in the sky, some of this type of equipment. And he would help. He would really help. He was not there to hinder in any way at all, and that was wonderful.
What was his conduct like then? I mean, had he settled down?
I remember he drank a great deal, and that made him sort of popular at the bar. And I think he was a leading light of the sergeant's mess, and probably one of those likely to try and get the officers under the table. Almost certain. And I'm sure he did me and others. But not in any vicious way at all, just part of the fun.
Any other characters that come to mind in particular from that time? Or should we leave that until we get on the way to Korea?
I think probably leave that, because from there we move then to Dover Castle.
So you left Germany in...
We left Germany, I would like to think, in about February of 51... and moved into Dover Castle. And that was a wonderful experience. I'd always wanted to live in a castle.
What was it like? I mean, what was it like as a billet?
Freezing cold. Bloody awful. The North Sea winds would whip round these long corridors. One had a large room and a coal fire, and your ration was a bucket of coal a day, which was brought up delivered dutifully every day by the orderly. You could never get more than one bucket. And I think a bucket would be, with the flue and the draft, would probably burn in about 2 hours. So it was a... one would save buckets to have a decent time. And particularly if you were a duty officer. I remember being duty officer in Dover Castle. The corridors and the underground tunnels in Dover Castle are really quite scary. You would... and we were there in winters. I remember wearing my great coat and a sword and going along these dark corridors with much apprehension. It was, you know, to visit the guard that was scattered around the castle. And you'd visit them three or four times during the night. And marching by yourself was quite scary. Long, dark corridors, movement, rats, God knows what. It hadn't changed much, I think, since Napoleonic days, when the French prisoners dug all the caves and secure facilities under the castle, like... hospitals, like underground accommodation, which was used extensively, of course, in the early part of the war and for the management of the evacuation of Dunkirk. It's a wonderful place to visit. But we were then sort of marshalled in there. We did some training, but the regiment was being brought up to strength during that time.
Now, there seems to be a very confused period, because the regiment thought it was going to Hong Kong from there.
That's right.
And then also there were some problems with with a large draft of national servicemen who couldn't be sent to Korea, and two rifle companies were suspended for a while, and then you had drafts coming in, and there were problems with those drafts because they were too near the end or the time or too young.
That's right, it was a timing issue.
What do you remember of these reinforcements?
It was an incredibly mixed period. National service, the regiment was under strength substantially in officers and men on arrival in Dover Castle. We expected to go to the Far East, Hong Kong. National service people arrived. They were then vetted. If they had less than a year to do, they weren't going to come with the regiment. So they were formed in other units within the battalion and did other sort of menial tasks, anything we could find for them to do. Whilst we tried to build up the proper companies and platoons. But it was very difficult because people were coming in. Basically, we were being supplied from the East Anglian division, East Anglian region, Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire, Essex, Suffolk, and obviously Norfolk. But all these people would arrive. We would then have to analyze them, put them on one side if they could not go with us to the Far East, do some training, mainly marching, because there's an excellent barrack square in Dover Castle, maintain Dover Castle, feed the soldiers, send them off on long weekends. We couldn't think of anything else to do with them. Then again, I was messing officer for the whole battalion, which was a nightmare, because we never knew how many men we were going to have from Friday to Friday, and the rations in bulk drawn from the central supply point were always short. And we'd send people home for the weekend so they didn't have to eat and we'd have enough food. It was a constant problem. And officers were coming and going. A lot of the officers from Germany went to other jobs. A lot came in, a lot that we'd never even heard of, but they were Royal Norfolk and coming in from staff jobs and so on. We still thought we were going to Hong Kong sometime later in the year, and we continued on at Dover Castle into the summer.
I think in June you went to Crowborough.
That's right. Well, about into the earlier summer, I remember we were playing cricket at Britannia Barracks in Norwich in some regimental event, and the cricket match was stopped for a minute or so, whilst I think a senior officer came out and told us that, in fact, we were going to Korea. And you know, it's surprising now, but we all cheered. We were all absolutely thrilled to be going to Korea to practice what we'd been trained for, i.e. war, and get some real experience with very little thought as to the risks involved. I always said at Sandhurst they taught you everything, but they never taught you the last paragraph in the book, training manual, which was that the enemy, in fact, will try and do you harm. And I found that very surprising later on. So we were told we were going to Korea. We cheered. We went back. We were thrilled. We went back to Dover Castle, moved to Crowborough. The battalion was still being replenished and trying to be brought up to establishment, which it never was. You were always short in your platoon of privates, of corporals, of sergeants. And there was a lot of doubling up. You would make a good corporal, a temporary sergeant for an activity until somebody came. It was a constant problem. And officers were coming and going, appointments to the staff officers coming back for real regimental activity. And then finally, I think about August, we went on the Empire Orwell.
Hang on. It says that there was some sort of very valuable training, Stanford practical training.
Yes.
Do you remember? Was it valuable? What exactly was it?
Well, it was a long drive in convoy to Stanford, which is in Norfolk, from Crowborough. The trucks all kept breaking down. So it was a work of art and magic to get your unit there on time. We then played war games a simulated battle with a real simulated plan of activity to follow. And we were there for a week to 10 days. A long time, living rough, digging slip trenches, filling them in. I think there were no tents, if I remember. We slept rough out in the field. The weather was appalling, and we did lots of maneuvers, lots of exercises. I remember there were... Oh, and then we came back, and the convoy just completely disintegrated. It poured with rain all the return journey. I remember the Bren Gun carriers, most of them got washed away. They just didn't work because of the very, very heavy rain. And you just see them abandoned all the way down from Stanford. I think the training was good. It hardened you. You learnt to live off in different food out of cans. You learnt to...
This was harder than what you'd had in Germany.
Oh, yes, much harder, much harder. It was, I think, the senior echelon's attempt to harden us, because I think we got soft, frankly, in Germany. I think we had a soft life in Dover, and they thought, gosh, as you know, maybe they knew we were going in August. We better have one more effort to get them together and to work as a team, do some real good hard field exercise. We marched great distances carrying all our equipment, only to get there to dig in, and to then have a simulated battle, only to fill up the trenches and march to another place. A lot of map reading, which is quite difficult in Norfolk, because being so flat, there are hardly any distinguishing marks. A lot of us like bird life, and we like the sort of there was a number of rare birds, I remember, in that area. So that brought us back to, I think, a reasonable understanding of what was going to be expected from us.
What about other preparations? I'm thinking in the lines of vaccinations.
Yes, there were a lot of medical checks. A lot of soldiers were rejected medically. For all sorts of not very obvious reasons. Flat feet, I remember some people were rejected for overseas service, for active service. We were warned for active service. That was the condition, if you will, a condition red. And once you were warned for active service, a lot of people who were in cushy jobs elsewhere were returned to the unit. Medical standards were raised, having been warned for active service. You started being issued with permanent equipment, like your own rifle or Sten gun, which before you'd tend to draw out a rifle and it wouldn't have been yours. You zeroed those rifles in. We shot at Bisley, out of the competition time, all the Bisley ranges were nearby. Some of the officers, I remember now, and I was included, were sent to Hythe, which is the small arms wing, small arms school corps at Hythe and Shorncliffe Barracks to learn really how to shoot, not as a sort of almost an accidental event, but for a month to 6 weeks, we junior officers were sent, not necessarily as a regimental unit, but as each group would probably have two or three Norfolk officers, and we would fire Bren guns, which we wouldn't ordinarily expect to handle being officers, rifles, Sten guns, grenades. Become real experts with those weapons. These excellent sergeant majors in the small arms school corps, who were just superb at their weapon, treated one as they were the tutor, and the 10 of us were the pupils, and we lived with them, and when we passed out, we were proficient in those weapons out at Sean, just by High, the Dymchurch. There are great ranges out there, and we just lived on those ranges. I've forgotten that period. Soldiers were also sent on similar courses. It became almost too serious for the regimental officers to train the men at weapons. It was the experts that were required. And so we really felt we could shoot well, and we knew our weapons. And finally, we were all in Crowborough.
Did you get an embarkation leave?
Yes, we got embarkation leave, and we were very proud of that and rushed off. Having had our medical, but it was rather amusing, in our having passed our medicals, we were then inoculated with all sorts of things. And, of course, it was from smallpox and yellow fever and all sorts of things. And it was very funny to watch lines of great, tough, burly young men keeling over and crashing to the ground while they were lined up waiting for their injection. I would think you probably had 10% of us who would faint at the concept of having an injection. And it was quite a feature. And there was a sort of nurse or somebody on the side to for those that fainted to bring them back and put them back in line.
Was there an adverse reaction to some of those potpourris?
Yes, small chicken pox. Yes, there were, one expected to get a sore arm, and one did. And they were painful. And one of the, I think it was a vaccination, maybe for smallpox, you know, you had a scab and it started to itch. And, of course, the soldiers would scratch them all, and then we'd have to go get the MO to see them and either do it again or put patches on them. But by and large, we got our health right. And we were quite fit. All the time we were doing marches, anybody that happened to be in Crowborough was almost instinctively put on a route march or put on a cross-country run. There was a great emphasis on personal fitness.
Now, what about these embarkation leave? What was that like? I mean,
I was 20, I would have been 19, something like that. And, oh, great fun, because you went home, you were... Your girlfriends were very sympathetic, and you played that tune to the maximum, and you enjoyed yourself to the full. But it came, you know, it was probably 7 days. It wasn't a long embarkation.
Were your parents worried?
Yes, they were worried, but not seemingly so. I mean, I was a bit disappointed. I remember sort of saying, well, I'm on embarkation leave, and Mother would say something like, well, that's fine, dear. Now, the roses, you know, have been so good this year, you must come round and see them. of course, the headlines were still quite fierce, and there had been some violent battles in Korea at that time. And we were clearly going to what seemed to be developing into a major war. Maybe our parents were good at hiding their innermost thoughts. Anyway,
I forgot to ask before we leave Crow. Were you in the camp there?
Yes.
So it would be huts.
Oh yeah, they were Nissen huts. Everything was Nissen huts that I could, except Dover Castle, of course. And coming from a Dover Castle to a Nissen hut was a bit of a
comfort. What would a Nissen hut like to live in? Would an officer, would two of you, how many would be in there?
A platoon would fit into a Nissen hut. The sergeant would probably have a private accommodation carved out, but he would be resident there, and the corporals would have... They would sort of almost sleep at the end of each section. So it was almost as though it were ready to move, with the sergeant in, eating separately. British Army always, when it could, ate separately. The sergeants would eat in the sergeant's mess. The soldiers would eat in the soldier in their cookhouse, which were always supervised by officers and sergeants. Duty officer of the day, always, and very seriously, just wouldn't walk around and say any complaints, but would really walk around. And in our regiment, the duty officer was expected to sit down and eat the meal in the cookhouse with the soldiers. That was rather unusual. Most of us tended to forget about it, but it did happen. and the colonel would visit, and the food, I think, was, generally speaking, very good. The Nissen huts were effective, the line of showers, pretty sort of simple zinc showers for about six people, all open, all exposed, and the toilets were all very simple, very basic, but there. But you slept well. The battle was to open the windows. Half the soldiers didn't want the windows open, half did. And if you didn't open the window, it was not very fresh in the morning. The officers ate, of course, in the officers' mess, and they would have a Nissen hut. The officers' mess would be a Nissen hut, the sergeant's mess would be a Nissen hut, and the officers would be accommodated. Eight junior officers per Nissen hut, sort of thing.
Was it partitioned off, or was it just shared?
Was partitioned off, but very simply, because it was open at the top and the bottom. So it was just a pure, simple partition. But there was a little privacy. And you all tended, certainly the company officers were together, the junior officers. And the senior officers, of course, had rather better accommodation.
Now, you left Crowborough in, the end of August.
End of August, went down to Southampton to get on the Empire Orwell, which was a former German ship, which I think had been taken over at the end of the war. And we were astonished at the standard. Very high indeed. Waiters, tablecloths, waiters in proper clothing, lunch, dinner, beautiful in the officers' mess, beautiful standard, a very high standard. The sergeants, okay, and the soldiers had very good food.
What was the accommodation for the officers, the sergeants, the men like on board the ship?
Very good. The officers, generally speaking, had three to a cabin, and according to seniority, the number would go down. And I think probably the majors would have a cabin to themselves, maybe the captains would have two, and we junior officers would have three or four per cabin. And I think there was a fair degree of swap. You could go in with your friends, and nobody seemed upset.
Now, there was a bit of a send-off. You left on the 30th of August from Southampton. Do you remember the send-off?
Yes, I do. I do. The band, we had a band there. I can't remember who came to see us off, but it was a high-ranking person, I think. And I can't remember who that was.
Brigadier Daunt, probably.
Okay, yes. And he was, I think... That's right, it was going to be General Hayes, who was the regimental commandant, retired, a gentleman who had accepted me into the Royal Norfolk Regiment, and whose daughter, Monique, lives in Romney, just down the road here. He actually collapsed on the day we sailed, and as we pulled away, it was announced that he had died on the ship tannoy system. But we had a good band and a good send-off, and Rule Britannia was played everywhere. We were very proud. Getting on the ship was extremely well handled. There was no confusion.
You took all your weapons with you?
We took our weapons with us. Each man was responsible for his own weapon, often the rifle or the Sten gun if you were an NCO. And they went on board with you, with your kit bag, which had a minimum of stuff in it, of private stuff, but all your army stuff. You wore your webbing, your equipment to get on board with the kit bag, and your rifle. No steel helmets were used ever from that point on, so they didn't bother with that. And we got on board, and then guess what? Inevitable training. Of course, we had boat drill. We had PT.
Well, tell us about the boat drill. How serious was it?
Very, very serious indeed, because you had the entire battalion on board, and the boat drill happened, I think, on a weekly basis, and we were on the ship for a month, which was really quite a long time. The first boat drill was quite chaotic. I remember, you were looking for your platoon. If you found your platoon, you were then trying to find the members of the platoon. But it was a good spirit. The crew of the boat, of course, were very helpful, and they knew where we were going, and I think